night for this?
Thank God it's
Feels good to finally be on a Friday. We finish off the work week. Yeah, you can put that work away. We head into a sports weekend with the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Caleb Hatch, and we've got you connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. Busy show today. Greg Rakestraw is going to join us coming up a little bit later this hour. Hour number two will start off with a bang, a big bang, because we've got an offensive tackle that's 6'7", 300-plus pounds, and the Colts made him one of their top draft picks this NFL draft. It is Bernard Raimann from Central Michigan, who is going to join us live on the program just after 5 o'clock, so you want to join us for that. Also, what else do we have going on? I guess I was going to say we've got tickets, because I'm so used to giving away tickets.
Today we do not have tickets to give away.
Ticketless Friday.
Shockingly.
Welcome to our Ticketless Friday show here at the Sports Rush. It's actually like the only day out of a two-week period we're not going to have tickets. Next week, we are going to have tickets for Indy qualifying. Yes, Caleb Hatch will escort you down to Indianapolis for a day of qualifying. Actually, not. But
I won't escort you, but I will be down there both days. Turn one, E-Penthouse. Come say hello if you so desire.
I actually had to host a group of listeners one time for a show down in Indianapolis. This was back when I was an air personality. And you know, I've got a history of multiple names that I've used on the radio here in town. Most people probably don't remember them. Most people probably didn't listen. But I've got a history. Sideshow Bo. Actually, my first on-air name, and this was way back when I was doing country music, it was Brett Rogan. I just kind of like that. If for a country name, Brett Rogan.
I cannot picture you being a country DJ.
Oh, man. I jammed out like the best of them. Actually, I put the contemporary into country music. Because when I came on board, now you have to realize, Caleb, this isn't yesterday.
Are we talking today's pop country, red dirt country?
I was playing the 45s. Classic. That's how long ago it was. It was a contemporary country music station, but here's the strange thing, and here's how you come full circle sometimes in your career. I was on this frequency. I was on 1380, the Hawk 1380 country music, Federated Media station. That was back when Federated Media had only the Hawk 1380 and WMEE. Now we've become the radio giant here in town with WoWo and K105. K105 eventually is kind of the FM version of what the Hawk was on the AM dial. And so I was like, how old was I? I was 19 years old, and I was looking for a job in radio. I was the sports director at Valpo. I was hosting a show at night, a nightly show at Valparaiso University. And I happened to be connected to the person who was the operations manager for WMEE and for the Hawk 1380 at the time. I tried to get on WMEE because Top 40 was more my thing. I was not a country music listener. And he called me and he said, hey, I've got the perfect opportunity for you, but it's on country music. It's on the country station. Would you be interested? And I thought, you know, somehow you got to get your foot in the door. And this is back when actually there was a line at the door. You know, now it's like, please work for us. But there used to be a line at the door. And so I thought, this is my opportunity. He's giving me one. I better not say I'm not a country music fan. So I took the job, and here's what the job was. It was a weekender. Now, you have to remember, there was no automation at the time. Everything had to be live. I worked midnight Friday night until 6 a.m. on Saturday morning. Then I worked 5 p.m. to midnight on Saturday night, and then I worked noon to 6 on Sunday. So not a lot of sleep for me over the weekend. And but man, I got my experience. And then eventually I was there only a few months, and someone left and they made a shuffle of the weekly lineup, and I ended up being overnights. And now, thank goodness they don't have to have overnights anymore, because I worked the overnight shift, midnight to six. And I did it. Plus, I coached Wildcat baseball. Plus, I umpired Little League baseball. And so I would get off at 6 a.m. after working all through the overnight. I would head to Wildcat at about 7:30 in the morning, get done at Wildcat at about 3:30, and then around 6 and 7:45, I'd have Little League games to do, get done with those around 9:30, 10 o'clock, and at midnight, back on the air. Yeah, I mean, talk about grinding, trying to make your way. And so I was spending almost my entire life working in sports and radio. And here I am 40 years later working in sports radio. But no, I had to host, we'll get back to the original point. I had to host a limousine caravan, or whatever you would call it, a limousine ride from Fort Wayne down to Indy with a group of concert ticket winners. We were going to at the time it was Deer Creek, to see a concert. Now, here's the thing, Caleb. The concert was the Backstreet Boys. The group was the mom and about 9, 12, and 13-year-olds.
And that'd be like going to a Justin Bieber concert in more recent times.
Kind of, yes. And like Taylor Swift, Justin Bieber, or JoJo or whatever her name is. She might appeal to slightly younger, but so it was almost like, I almost wanted to file a complaint with my employer for unfair, working conditions, because I had to spend like 5.5-6 hours with this group of crazy, wild 12 and 13 year olds in the back of a limousine, taking them down to this trip. But we won't be doing that, but we will have tickets next week to give away to the qualifying. So that starts on Monday. Oh, and also, I guess we can tease this as well. We're going to be giving away tickets to the race. We'll have a chance for you to win. Details coming up at 1380thefan.com. Is it really Friday the 13th? Because that seems like a pretty lucky stretch right there to be able to give away tickets to qualifying, tickets to the race. Are you superstitious? Friday the 13th, does it panic you at all?
I'm not superstitious, but I am a little stitious, if you know that quote.
Not quite so super. Well, let me put it this way. My Friday the 13th started with like an 8 a.m. doctor's appointment. So I thought, if it's going to be a bad Friday the 13th, I'm going to find out really early this morning. Actually, things went pretty well at the doctor. I've dealt with the COVID aftermath. The one thing the doctor did tell me is we're going through a huge surge right now and no one knows it. He said last week, for a month, he saw almost no one with COVID. Last week, he had maybe 4 or 5 people during the entire week. This week, he's been seeing 4 or 5 people a day. Now, remember, it's just one doctor, 4 or 5 people a day that are coming in testing positive for COVID. So I guess, we used to kind of pay attention to these things. Now we don't as much, but I guess we are hitting another wave or another surge that's kind of kicking in. And so please, if you are at risk, please take the precautions and understand COVID did not leave. It's still around. 46862 Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Caleb, last night, the big event. I never watched it at all. Didn't have to, because by 8 o'clock when the show was starting, I think I already knew everybody's schedule. It kind of just all kind of started slipping out on social media. And so I ended up with the Colts schedule. And I'll tell you what, I think the Colts got a great schedule. I don't know if you had a chance to follow it last night. I'm sure you didn't watch it, because I know your attitude about it.
No, I waited for the tweet to come out, saw the schedule, retweeted it, posted on the Facebook page, and I was done.
And that was all you needed. I thought the Colts did pretty well with their schedule. And you know what? I had the right team, the wrong location. because I my pick yesterday was that the Colts were going to open up with Houston, and I said that it was going to be at home, and instead the Colts are going to open up at Houston on the road. In fact, they will start back to back on the road before coming to home, and then their home opener, Kansas City Chiefs. Kansas City in September. That's not necessarily a great thing.
I look at the first six games on the schedule, and I think it's tougher than people realize. So obviously Kansas City, which that's really tough to open at home against Kansas City. You also have Tennessee, so a key division tilt a week later. Yes, you start at Houston, then go at Jacksonville. But then you have Denver on the road. That's going to be really tough. Jacksonville back at home. Look, I'll be honest. I think the Colts split against Jacksonville next year. I think it's easy to pencil in them both as wins, but I think the Jaguars will be much improved. Trevor Lawrence is only going to get better. That team is only getting better. I think that's a split. And with Tennessee, you can't underestimate them. I get that they lost a lot of pieces in the offseason, but you still can't underestimate Tennessee, and the Colts always seem to find a way to play down to the level of their opponents, especially in the division. So to me, I can't look past the possibility of a 3-3 start.
Okay, so when you look at the schedule, it starts at Houston, at Jacksonville. They can't do it again at Jacksonville, can they? That lay another egg? I mean, Caleb, I know they've had a history of issues trying to win at Jacksonville. What is it? Is it eight straight that they've lost, or what's the record at Jacksonville? I know they've not done well at Jacksonville. But they start with the Texans, and the Texans could be, in fact, I think you probably, it's fair to say that the Texans are the worst team in football right now, aren't they?
Yeah, Texans and then probably the Browns, assuming Deshaun Watson can't play. I mean, they're not going to be good either. Well, you have to think about that.
Well, the Browns might have Baker Mayfield if Deshaun Watson can't play, because no one else will take him. So you've got the Texans, then you've got the Jaguars, both on the road, but that takes care of two road games and it's two divisional games and it's two games that the Colts really should win. Should, we'll put it that way. And then you go to the home games against Kansas City and Tennessee. If they can at least split those, they get a 3-1 start before going to Denver to take on the Broncos. Now, I'm trying to remember the Broncos schedule because I think this is playing the Broncos right after they might play. Is it Kansas City? Who do they play in week four? The Broncos, I think, have
week four is that's the Titans. So that's right after Kansas City. So you go from home against Kansas City.
No, not the Colts. The Broncos. Who are they? They're going to get the Broncos the week after the Broncos play somebody in week four. And I'm trying to remember who the Broncos have in week four. But the Broncos then on the road before coming back home, and they will then take on the Jaguars at home. Now, even if they lose at Denver, if they get off to a 3-1 start with losses to Kansas City and Denver, then they would be 3-2. If they can beat Jacksonville then at home after beating them on the road in week number two, they could be 4-2 to start. Now, remember last year, what were they? Were they 1-5, 1-4, 1-5 to start the season? And then they have a road test at Tennessee, but then they have Washington at home. That should be a winnable game. They go to New England the following week, and then they go to the Raiders out in Las Vegas, which is a November 13th game, which is not bad for Colts fans. That's kind of a good time of year to go to Vegas, because Vegas does have a month or so of winter weather where it can be very unpredictable and cold at times, but that generally doesn't happen until the very end of November, maybe even in December. And so going on November 13th, the weather should still be, mid-70s, low to mid-70s out in Vegas. And then the Colts come home for two in a row against the Pennsylvania teams. They'll have the Eagles on the 11th, the Steelers on the 12th, before they go down to Dallas and take on the Cowboys. I still think that's a winnable game. I think the Cowboys are overrated. Then the Colts get their bye week in week 14, which again, I think if most teams had a choice of when they would have their bye week, they would want it later rather than sooner. So week 14, I don't know. Is that the latest there are byes in the NFL? Can't imagine they go any further than week 15. But in week 14, the Colts will get their bye, and then they'll come off their bye taking on the Minnesota Vikings. Then they have the Los Angeles Chargers at home. They're at the Giants, and then they finish with the Texans in Lucas Oil Stadium.
Last time the Colts won in Jacksonville, 2014. Now, granted, one of those losses against the Jags in a quote-unquote road game was in London in 2016. So they're 0-5 against the Jags in Jacksonville, and then that additional loss in the 2016 London game.
So,
however, at home, Colts are 6-1 since that year.
Yeah, they've just had a tough time winning in Jacksonville. And they'll get the test week number two this year. And I hope they don't look past game number one, because remember, they seem to do that. I mean, this is a team that has had a history of not being able to win the first game of the season. And so hopefully they can break that streak. And then, in fact, the Colts open up basically with two games where they're trying to break streaks. One is the opener, trying to win an opener, which they've not been able to do. And then the second streak is going to be win in Jacksonville, which they've not been able to do. Last time they won an opener was when? 2013, 14? I mean, it's been a while since they won an opener as well. I think they've lost like eight straight openers, haven't they? I know the Colts have struggled winning in week one. So they'll have the week one game where they'll try to get kind of over the hump, and then week two at Jacksonville where they'll try to break the streak against the Jaguars.
Last time the Colts won a season opener, 2013, 21-17 over the then Oakland Raiders.
We'll take a timeout. We're going to come back. Greg Rakestraw is going to join us, talk more about the Colts schedule and plenty more when we return. It is a Friday edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rupp along with Caleb Hatch. You're always connected to the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. And now turning over to our Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline, we welcome Greg Rakestraw, a guy that wears many hats in the sports community in the state. Of course, you see him broadcasting IHSAA games on the Champions Network. He also is the voice of Indy's soccer team. You get him on pre and post game or post game with the Colts. He is a man about town and a friend of the show, and we welcome him to the program today on this Friday. Good afternoon, Greg. How are you?
I'm good, my friend. How are you?
Doing well. Of course, today a little bit of a solemn day. This week we had one of the, what I think was the most influential coaches that we've had in our area and maybe even in our state for a long time, pass away, losing the battle with cancer as Mark Davidson passes away today. I know they've got visitation happening out of Blackhawk. Tomorrow will be the funeral. You had a chance, obviously, with the trips that Blackhawk made to state to get to meet and know Mark Davidson. Your thoughts?
Mark was an intimidating figure until you talked to him. And then once you talked to him, you got to like Mark a great deal. And I will share with you a compliment that Mark paid me last year at the state finals media day in Indianapolis, because I had the chance to broadcast his son Frankie's games. I think I had one at UIndy when he was a freshman, and then had one last year with Grace against Mary when he was a sophomore. And Mark paid me a tremendous compliment when he said, "Hey, I wanted to let you know how much I enjoyed your broadcast of the Mary and Grace game." He goes, "I thought it was educational." He goes, "I sat back and I listened to that broadcast and I learned something." Wow. And I'm thinking, if a basketball coach that has won a state championship felt like he learned something listening to me do a broadcast, he made me feel awfully good about myself. So, you know, Mark was such a unique character study in terms of his faith, in terms of his talent, in terms of the fact that, you know, he played professionally overseas, spoke French fluently, was a power lifter after his basketball coaching days. There was, frankly, a lot of meat on the bone in terms of him as a person, but frankly, him as a story when you would be doing a Blackhawk Christian game in a state championship. And because of how successful their program was and the fact that they played on a state level, I got to know him on a handful of occasions. But that is my memory of Mark that will stick with me, that on a day where the story was about him and his team preparing for the 2A state championship game, he made it a point to pull me aside and compliment me on my work. And yeah. and that means the world to me. And while I have zero doubt in my mind where Mark is right now, if you are a believer, there is zero doubt that Mark is in heaven. I don't feel bad for Mark in this situation. I feel bad for his family, because while he left a great legacy and impact, there are still youngsters that will go through some great moments in life where he won't be around to share those with them. And so my heart goes out to the Davidson family. Even when you know it's coming, this is going to be a little rough time, and I will miss my friend greatly, but I feel for the Davidson family knowing he's not going to be around anymore.
Well, and I think his presence will be felt for a long time, not only within the basketball community because of the culture that he created around that basketball program at Black Hawk Christian, but also his family created a great culture, great kids, great support system with the older ones and the younger ones. And even if he's not here physically, his presence is going to be felt by that family. And I hope they understand that and they take it in and they feel it, because, a special person lost far too soon at just 49 years old. Greg,
absolutely.
Want to talk about the Colts schedule. Last night we found out the actual dates, even though we knew who they were going to play, we didn't know when. I look at this schedule and I think, boy, this was drawn up pretty well. The schedule that Frank Reich and Chris Ballard submitted might have been accepted, because I don't think this is too bad at all. I like the place where the bye is. I like the way they start. Your thoughts?
I do too. And again, we knew that the overall tenor of the schedule was not going to be the meat grinder that it was a year ago, simply because you have to play the NFC West, and knowing you played, you know, three out of four playoff teams from that division last year, you also knew that your bonus NFC opponent wasn't going to be the defending Super Bowl champions in Tampa Bay. No, you get the Minnesota Vikings in that trade-off. You know, you get the NFC East, where Dallas was good and Philadelphia was a playoff team, but the Commanders and the Giants have struggled now for quite some time. You get the benefit of getting to play Houston twice and Jacksonville twice, and yes, I know the Jacksonville ended the Indianapolis Colts season, so I get that. I'll say that out loud, but it is not the toughest schedule. In terms of kind of the way that it played out, I guess I look at it as almost the holidays missed. You know, where the Colts finally get some more home primetime games, because they have been, you know, begging for those for quite some time. You get an extra day off on Thanksgiving weekend. You get an extra day off on Christmas weekend. Again, you get the late bye, because the Colts seemingly had always had an October bye or maybe a November bye. They get a December bye for the second week in a row, or for the second year in a row. And again, it is a schedule that generally you can kind of ease into, but also a schedule that has the majority of your division games early in the year. So this has been a slow starting team. It had better not be this year, because I think the schedule picks up as it goes along.
Of course, one thing the NFL loves is they love the storylines that go with games. It's not just matching opponents. It's about the storylines that happen with those games. We look at the Washington game that's going to be played in Indy, and there it is with a 4:25 kickoff. We know why the Colts would play the Commanders at 4:25. But the Colts overall seem to be more of a draw this year to the primetime audience. The game with Denver, where you've got two veteran quarterbacks that now play for different teams. That game ended up making prime time. And as you mentioned, twice on Monday nights at home. What happened?
That's a good question. Again, the Colts were a team that a lot of people were talking about in the National Football League last year, late in the season, as the team that you didn't want to play. And then they fell off just a cliff those last 2 weeks. Well, apparently they still have some Q rating. They did have seven Pro Bowlers off of last year's team. They did go out and get a Matt Ryan. They did go out and get a Stephon Gilmore. So I do think there is a general expectation, you know, from the league office, from those that put together a schedule, from television executives, that the Indianapolis Colts will be a playoff team this coming year. And I tend to agree with that. And so with that, they get the spoils of getting to play, you know, four primetime games, not the top, but certainly kind of towards the top third of teams that get that primetime slot. Everybody basically has to play a Thursday game, so you're going to get at least one primetime game. But the other thing that I would say is this, is that there is an expectation that this is a team that has some stars on it. And so there is going to be, again, kind of a national Q rating for this group, which tends to be a good thing for the franchise.
Greg, take me inside the process. I don't know if you know it, but I hope you do, because I'm not exactly sure. The process of putting a schedule together and then selecting the primetime games, those that fall on the late slot on Sunday, those that fall on Sunday night and on Monday night, and even the Thursday. Now, I assume the league schedules the Thursday games because they got to get everybody into that rotation. But as far as you mentioned, the TV executives, what is the process for determining what games hit the biggest stage?
I don't know the exact process, but I do know there is almost a draft process. In other words, NBC is going to get X amount of selection in terms of Sunday Night Football. Then at some point, the networks in terms of Fox and CBS get to protect a certain number of games for a 1 o'clock or for a 4:25 national window. And this example, I'll go back 15 years. The year after the Colts in the Super Bowl was the year that the Patriots traded for Randy Moss. And everyone kind of knew, hey, Colts-Patriots middle of the season is going to be perhaps the most important regular season game that we're going to have. At that point, NBC Sunday Night Football, I think, would have been in year two or year three. It was year two of Sunday Night Football where NBC got the primary games on a Sunday night. Well, that game, that Colts-Patriots game in 07, was a 4:25 kickoff on CBS because CBS protected that game. So in terms of the exact process, I do not know. Again, on Thursday night, everybody has to play on Thursday night once. That way everybody kind of gets dealt that short week at some point in time during the season. But in terms of the Sunday night, Monday night, Sunday afternoon slots, there's X amount of primetime games you could be scheduled for. I think that limit might be six with a 17-game schedule. I think six is the cap on that. But then it becomes a NBC gets X amount of selections. The network gets X amount of selections. Then ESPN ABC comes in, and it kind of shuffles down from that point.
I'll tell you this, one of the best pieces of production done within the NFL, and it's not done by the NFL, it's done by the Indianapolis Colts, but it has to be the video series with the next pick. I just love it. Going behind the scenes and kind of pulling back the curtain on the Colts heading into the draft and throughout the draft. I felt this way before I watched the video, but felt even more after watching the latest edition that the Colts really scored on Friday night. They went in with their eyes on two or three guys, and maybe even two or three guys for the first pick they were going to have that night, and they ended up really scoring, I think, everybody they wanted. I thought it was a terrific draft on Friday. Saturday, I thought it was a risk and reward type of draft where you take chances on some guys that have freakish athletic ability and just hope you can make them football players. But Friday, I thought the Colts really hit a home run. What were your thoughts on the draft?
I generally tend to think so as well. And again, just how will guys like Pierce and Woods and Ryman and Cross work out, we'll see. And again, they traded up back in the third round to get Cross, the safety from Maryland. I think he's more of an insurance pick in the next year or two in case Julian Blackman's injury history continues. If they don't want to offer Kari Willis a long-term deal because Kari's contract will be up at the end of this coming season, that was almost a Bill Polian-level pick where, you know, you would almost have some picks where you felt the guys are going to be special teams players, almost have like a redshirt year. You know, that's kind of what's coming up, you know, from their perspective. But in terms of the first three guys, in some combination, you had to go wide receiver, tight end, tackle. I probably, in terms of order of importance, I probably would have gone wide receiver, tackle, tight end. But let's not split hairs. The Colts went wide receiver, tight end, and then tackle. We'll see how Pierce plays out. I almost view it as this from the Colts wide receiver position. You know Pittman is your one. You know Doolin is your five because of what he does for you on special teams. Now it's a matter of can you make three players stick in between? And whether that is a veteran that is brought in, whether that is Paris Campbell, Mike Strawn, whether that is Desmond Patman, whether that is, other players that could be brought in from a signing standpoint, time will tell, but we'll see how the process plays out in terms of drafted receivers over the last 3 or 4 years for the Colts, because the other one that really has made a great impact for this team at this juncture has been Mike Pittman. Everybody else has been kind of on the wrong side of did they make it or did they not. As far as Ryman is concerned, the kid from Central Michigan at the tackle position, I think the Colts' preference would be that it's Matt Pryor's job to lose. We'll see how much the youngster from Austria kind of pushes him into that position as the season goes along. And then Jelani Woods, I think, is kind of risk-reward. And I still think, even with that draft pick, I think the biggest improvement or the biggest question mark at tight end for the Colts this year is going to be Mo Alie-Cox. This is going to be his fifth active season, his sixth season of playing football. 2017, it was almost a redshirt year for him as he was making the transition from playing at VCU to playing in the NFL. He has always been the number two or the number three. Now he is going to be the number one in terms of the tight end position. And can he make that jump? Does Jelani Woods help to push him in terms of making that jump? But to me, the tight end position, I still look at Mo Alie more so than I do the kid that was brought in from Virginia. But yes, those first three picks for the Colts, I thought those were the boxes they had to check, and Chris Ballard and company absolutely did that.
Any chance T.Y. Hilton wears a Colts uniform this year?
I honestly don't think so. There was, I thought, a significant drop-off in what he could do from, say, 2020 to 2021. I think if T.Y. was coming back, I frankly think that move would have already happened at this point. So I'd love to be wrong, but unfortunately, I think T.Y.'s days as a Colt are likely numbered.
Well, it's great to talk to you. What's on the Rakestraw schedule this weekend? You've got games to call?
I am on my way to high school baseball, Danville and South Putnam, as we speak. And then I am at the track tomorrow. I am the morning PA voice for activities at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So if you're at the track tomorrow, you will hear me from 7:30 until about noon. And then I have an if necessary game tomorrow afternoon. So myself and John Herrick, we have been splitting the Horizon League softball tournament on ESPN+. Unfortunately, the Mastodons did not qualify for that. So I had 2 full days of college softball yesterday, and I am the standby guy in case they need a 2:30 game from Youngstown, Ohio, tomorrow afternoon.
You working the track for qualifying at all?
I'll be out there, so I'll be doing radio in terms of qualifying for the fan in Indianapolis. So
okay.
I'll be out Tuesday through Friday for practice during the mornings, and then I will be doing the coverage and the yapping about coverage around the Indianapolis Motor Speedway radio network next week. So I've got 4 hours of radio next Saturday and 4 hours of radio next Sunday. I got a couple of telethon days out of the track next weekend.
Always a month to juggle everything around, Greg, but appreciate you juggling us into your schedule. Appreciate the time. Have a great weekend.
Anytime and every time, my friend. We'll see you soon.
Yep, that is Greg Rakestraw joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. Always a joy to talk to Rake. Always has a great take. That is Greg Rakestraw on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. We'll keep the show moving. It is a Friday edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Glad to have you with us on a Friday edition of the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Brett Rump with Caleb Hatch, 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. We head into a sports weekend. What is the sports event you're looking most forward to this weekend? It is a Friday the 13th. Tonight, the Tin Caps back in action at South Bend after a victory last night. And we said Noel Vella has been arguably the best Tin Caps pitcher, maybe not arguably, because going into last night, he had been terrific. He was even better last night. I think he ended up spinning, 6 innings of shutout baseball. Tin Caps ended up getting the victory last night in South Bend, and they will try it again tonight. Game time 7:05. That means we've got John Nolan and Mike Maz on the call from South Bend, starting with the Hoopy Insurance Services pregame show at 6:45. We're just 12 minutes away from Bernard Ryman, the new Colts offensive tackle. You just heard Greg Rakestraw speak of him. Of course, Ryman, is he competing for a starting job? I guess that's one of the questions. Do you perceive that he is being brought in with an opportunity to compete for the left tackle job, or is basically the pressure off and it's a, quote, red shirt year, that he won't have to take the field. He will learn, he will develop, and play behind Matt Pryor up until the point if Matt Pryor can't go. But Caleb, what do you expect from Rhyman? Is he going to have a shot to be the guy at left tackle, or is this kind of the redshirt year to learn and be mentored by Matt Pryor before taking over that position in the long term, which I think is the Colts' plan?
I think with Rhyman, it's on-the-job training in year one. If he breaks through as a starter before the end of the season, you're ahead of schedule. If he's ready to be the starter for his second season, you're on schedule. Anything beyond that, I'd say you kind of wonder if the pick's going to pan out.
46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Last night, NBA playoffs, it is over for Philadelphia. And already they have come out and said that that Doc Rivers is going to be back as the coach for the Philadelphia 76ers. That was the great debate that was going on the radio over the last couple of days. National talk shows were debating on whether Doc Rivers was going to be a long-term solution in Philadelphia, or if the failing of this team would be leading to his demise in Philadelphia. And would Doc Rivers be a candidate to be the next coach of the Los Angeles Lakers? Well, Maury has come out and said that he is going to be the coach next season for Philadelphia. I guess the bigger question is, what's going to happen with James Harden? Of course, he's eligible for that Supermax deal. And quite honestly, with a guy that's making $47 million and he's basically become a glorified role player, I mean, I don't know if he had some kind of an injury he was dealing with, but James Harden was a shell of himself. If you want to talk about a guy that's maybe gotten over the hump and had his best years behind him and is on a rapid decline, because James Harden was not only no factor in this series, James Harden might have been a negative factor. The Sixers might have been better if Harden didn't even play. Just 11 points on 4 of 9 shooting in the game last night, as Miami wins at 99-90 over Philadelphia, and it wraps up the series 4-1. So not exactly a great showing in this series by James Harden. He had one game where he stepped up and was big time, kind of like what he used to be in Houston. But, you know, all of the drama that has surrounded him, as karma kind of caught up with James Harden a little bit, always wanting out, always looking for the better, you know, the better scenery, better opportunity, wanted to get out of Houston, ended up in Brooklyn, wanted to get out of Brooklyn, ended up in Philadelphia. And he has declined greatly, at least the performance that he had in this series.
Well, just in the last 2 years. So his last full season with Houston, he averages 34 a game in the regular season. Then you go to the split between Houston and Brooklyn last season, about 24 and change. Between Brooklyn and Philly, 22 down to 21 during his time with Philly. But then you look at his playoff performances, and it's also a sliding scale, 31.5 in 2019, 2020, just a few percentage points below 30, then down to 20 last year, and 18.5 this year. He's 32 going on 33 years old. He's a guy who is, aggressive in getting to the basket. It just seems like he's on the decline. Like that's all that it is, right? I mean, there's no other way for me to explain it, because
he looks slow. He looks out of shape. He doesn't have his shot. You could just go on and on. He's a totally different player for some reason right now.
And it's not that, well, he had a great cast of teammates around him that he didn't have to score as much. You can't say that, at least in the playoffs, because Embiid was out for several of those games.
Yeah, but he also didn't have the confidence to take over games. I mean, you know, I remember just a couple of years ago that James Harden was almost impossible to defend, because he had the step back 3-point shot, and then he would also give the pump fake on the 3-point shot, which you had to bite on, and then he was able to take it to the basket, weave and finish. He's not been doing much of either, and he doesn't seem to have the confidence that he can accomplish either. He doesn't look like he's real confident in his shot. Philadelphia's got some tough decisions to make as far as where they're at in their quote process, because to me, it almost looks like Philadelphia is similar to what the Pacers have. You build in some star players. Hey, the mesh just doesn't work. Tobias Harris, Joel Embiid, James Harden. It's not working in Philadelphia. It's not a championship formula. And so you got to decide where you move. But when you're putting $36 million into Harris, $34 million, and then jumping up to $40-some million next year for Embiid, James Harden, $47 million, I think you got to decide to blow it up, maybe start it over in Philadelphia. We'll take a break when we come back after the top of the hour. Bernard Raimann, Colts offensive tackle. He'll join us here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.